celebrating 30 years on Utah's airwaves. Western Life Radio thanks you for joining us around the campfire and for your ongoing support to Utah's longest-running home, garden, travel, and outdoor adventure program. You can always join us on our online campsite at westernliferadio.com.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then, hey! The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Connect with the world through Rise Broadband and stay in touch with all things important to you and your family. Known as the number one fixed wireless internet provider in the United States, Rise Broadband will keep you connected with work, school, shopping, and entertainment. Whether you live in a suburban or rural area, Rise helps keep you and your family connected with the people and things that you value most. Rise Broadband offers flexible packages designed to meet your budget so you can enjoy all your favorite music and movies with fast, reliable, in-home Wi-Fi. Stream your favorite shows, play the hottest games without buffering, and stay in touch with family and friends. Get more for less with Rise Broadband. To check availability in your area, visit risebroadband.com or call 844-411-RISE.
When carrying a firearm, always treat it as if it were loaded. Always keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you're ready to fire. Never let your muzzle point at anything you're not willing to destroy. And always be sure of your target, its environment, and any other safety hazards. This announcement's been brought to you by TaylorGunsmithing.com.
Discover the magic within Utah State Parks with an annual State Parks Pass. From boating and fishing to hiking, camping, and off-highway vehicle adventures, Utah State Parks offers a wide variety of activities in the great outdoors. An annual State Park Pass opens the gate to year-round adventures at an amazing price. The annual State Park Pass provides day-use access for you and your family. In addition, Utah State Parks opens the gate to cultural and historical parks where you can learn more about Utah's rich heritage. And don't forget to reserve your favorite campsites year-round with options in teepees, yurts, and hammocks in addition to the standard tent and RV options. Visit the trailhead for more information at stateparks.utah.gov.
I'm Governor Spencer Cox. We live in an incredible state, and this time of year, my family and I, we love to ride. Unfortunately, we've had too many fatalities this year. And while safety equipment is critical, it's not enough. Remember to always be aware of your surroundings and never ride beyond your capabilities. We want to make sure that you make it home safe. And never forget, nobody is invincible.
Faster Utah is proactive about school safety. For more information, fasterutah.org.
Nothing quite like the great outdoors, and at Sportsman's Warehouse, we share your passion for hunting, fishing, and camping. If you want to feel at one with nature, this is the place to gear up. So whether you're ice fishing, predator hunting, snowshoeing, or winter camping, Sportsman's Warehouse has a terrific selection of all the latest equipment for your outdoor adventure. So when it's cold outside, that's the time to come and see what's hot inside at Sportsman's Warehouse. Sportsman's Warehouse. Take it outside.
Play safe on the water. In Utah, youth 12 to 17 must pass an approved safety class prior to operating personal watercraft on Utah waters. Classes are offered statewide. Register now or get more information by calling 801-538-BOAT. Visit stateparks.utah.gov. This message brought to you by the Utah State Parks Boating Program.
Life Radio with your host, Brian Brinkerhoff.
Camping in the mountains, fishing in a stream. The great outdoors is where you want to be.
Mr. Alex Grover joins us once again in the garden with Utah Gardeners talking about fantastic opportunities in February. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes with us.
No problem. I always love coming out and talking to the folks in Radio Land and talk about good gardening and make somebody's life just a little bit better.
It's a good idea to check that soil. The USU Extension Service does offer soil testing services to give you an idea what you may or may not need.
Yeah, soil testing is dirt cheap. Yeah, that was intended. And it's not a bad thing to go in and get an initial test. And that'll tell you if you've got one of those worn-out soils, too. They'll also tell you if you've got too much salt. Then they'll give you some recommendations on how to fertilize it. I have a tendency to follow my gut on things, which is scientifically probably wrong. But I'm familiar enough with the soils, I don't feel like I need to as much. I can usually tell when I'm getting low on nitrogen. Potassium and phosphorus are not ones that are inherently low. Every once in a while, I'll add a fertilizer that has potassium and nitrogen just to replace anything I've taken, but I don't need to do it that much, honestly. And so I'm kind of guilty. I don't test perhaps as I should, but also make sure when you get the test that you have people explain it to you, read all the stuff they give you, and make sure you understand what's really going on so you're not just taking a test because somebody said to take a test. If you don't understand what the test means, if you don't understand what you're supposed to get out of it, then the test is useless. So don't take it because somebody said take it. Take it and understand what it says, what it's for, and how that's going to affect you in gardening.
That's good advice. I know you've been really busy the last little bit as you're trying to get ahead of these blooms to get some pruning taken care of.
Yeah. Once February hits, I start picking up. Once beginning March hits, it's going to be chaos here. The state extension is, I'm afraid, not thinking things through. They're telling people, oh, wait till March to prune, wait till March to prune. You know, usually beginning of March, we start in on the apricots, the almonds, sometimes even the peaches, right there, end of February, beginning of March. What's going to happen this year, I don't know. So if you've been waiting till Utah State Extension tells you, jump the gun. We're mid-February. You're going to be perfectly safe pruning now. It's not going to damage your trees. Most years I start as soon as I can in January, and honestly, I've never seen any noticeable, not even substantial, any noticeable damage from the trees that I prune early versus the trees that I prune late. So keep that in mind, and if it looks like your buds are starting to fluff up and get large, you might want to get out there and prune before they burst open. The one time you don't want to prune is when your fruit trees are in flower. That's going to be a very weak situation for them. It'll open them up to a lot of contamination and potential for disease. So you want to get it before they burst. If they beat you, wait till they're done blooming, and then you can go in and prune. It's not preferable, but it's perfectly healthy. I would definitely get the pruning done February. When those peaches come on, they're going to come on really quick.
You could probably get some radishes in the ground. There's a number of things you can put in the ground right now. And, you know, you don't get too carried away because you don't know what the weather's going to do to you down the road. But there's a lot of stuff that probably will perform and probably survive if it does get cold or wet again.
All the stuff that you usually put in your cold season crops, I usually start in February and I'll plant every 2 weeks or so right up until I'm actually planting my main warm season crops. So you can go ahead and do that. Now, don't plant your whole packet at once unless you want to eat all of your lettuce on the same day. But if you go in and plant 6 or 12 inches and then another week to 2 weeks, plant another 6 to 12 inches, you can have a staggered harvest on your lettuce, your peas. Your carrots are going to ripen later, a lot of radishes. Your green crops, you may be able to get a good crop out of them a little bit earlier. I'll snip the young leaves off a lot of those and get them a little bit early. They're good and tasty that way. But anything that your local garden center says is a cool season crop or that your seed supplier says is a cool season crop, you can do it right now. I planted peas as early as actually the previous season, so I planted them late in the fall into December. And they'll lie dormant there, and then they'll come up when it gets warm enough, and then they'll lie dormant for a while, and then when it gets a little bit warmer, they'll say, okay, well, it's time to grow, and they'll go grow. And that works great. Don't necessarily recommend that because there are a lot of critters that are going to eat those seeds in the meantime, but it can be done. So I say jump on it. Home Depot and Lowe's have got seeds out. Walmart's lagging behind. Probably some of the nurseries have their seeds out. I haven't been to the other nurseries, and we focus more on perennials and trees and shrubs. We don't often do those seeds. But, yeah, get them planted. And, again, plant 12 inches. And if you eat them a lot, okay, you can plant 24 inches. That's fine. Although that actually ends up being a lot of grains on 24 inches. And then plant them, and then plant them again in 2 weeks, and plant them again in 2 weeks. And you'll keep a constant rotation of good, fresh food in your garden that way. Probably my plant dealers usually start getting active around March. So 1st of March, you're going to start seeing the new potted plants in the nursery. I don't know if we'll have an episode for March before that, but keep an eye out. It's a great time to get your rhubarb. Some of your cold weather or perennial vegetables will sometimes show up like that, but I'll have new fresh perennials, and we'll be bringing in the spring bloomers about March. So this is going to happen really before you know it, folks.
Those edible perennials are fun, you know, between asparagus and rhubarb and horseradish. They're all great plants to get established, and you can enjoy those year after year after year.
Can we just go ahead and say yum?
They are fun.
I'm going to tell you right now, there are a few joys in the world that equal a good beef meal with just a little bit of horseradish to spark it up. It doesn't overpower the taste of the beef. It might make you cry, but you'll still taste the beef. But I'll tell you what, it really makes that beef. You notice the taste of the beef, just that little bit of hot. Yum. There were times on my deployments where I would get so craving of horseradish sauce, I'd go get their cocktail sauce for fish. I would put it on the beef. There's just nothing better than horseradish, and the only horseradish I could get was the cocktail sauce. Wasn't very strong, but it had it.
I was thinking back a couple years ago when we did have this early spring and we planted early. We had the best peas we ever had because it never really got hot. The spinach and everything, they loved it. They thrived. It seemed to rain just enough to keep them moist. I didn't have to waste a lot of water on watering them and getting them established. They just seemed to be much happier. The peas especially, I mean, they were like growing in England. I've never seen more happy peas in all the years I've grown them.
Yeah, we're going to get some good peas this year. So, I mean, take it for what it's worth. I've also got to say, a lot of the herbs like thyme are perennial. They're going to show up in March in a lot of the nurseries, and they're going to be there. And this year at my nursery, I ordered in lemon thyme. And I'm going to tell you what, that stuff was to die for. My wife keeps on telling me I have to get more plants because I can never provide enough for more than one plant is right now one meal at a time, and then it's got to recover. So she wanted me to get another one, so I got a second one, and then she's been complaining about that not being enough. Kindly complaining, mind you, not nasty or anything. She wants more, so I got a third plant just recently out of my nursery, of course. And if you've not tried a good lemon thyme, there's some that's the variegated that's not as tasty, but I've got the really good quality, really good flavor on chicken or fish. There's nothing that beats this lemon thyme. It is so good on those. I haven't tried as much with beef, but, I mean, if you're going to do lemon and you're going to do fish, chicken and do fish, that lemon thyme is one of the best seasonings you'll ever get for it. It's gorgeous on flavor.
Rosemary, too. I mean, they're both really good, and a little sage. Lemon sage is really a good addition, too.
Yeah, I don't have any lemon sage. I'll have to keep an eye out for that one.
I've been a big fan of the lemon notes on a lot of those different plants. It just adds a whole new dimension to your culinary experience.
When I was growing up, my mom would buy Lowry seasonings. That was one version back then. And it was kind of reddish. It was kind of high on the salt and the MSG. But that's what we had to season with. Yeah, my mom was really limited. I mean, yeah, we had our Italian seasoning. But if you were going to have a steak or piece of meat, Lowry's went on everything.
I think the culinary horizons have changed a lot since when we were growing up here in the state of Utah.
We kind of grew up in the jet lag of where everyone was buying stuff the prepackaged way, and apples were all red and golden delicious, and once in a while a Granny or a Jonathan. The 70s and 80s were not a good culinary period to be growing up in, I will have to say. But now, most of us have yards. Most of us can put in an herb garden. I mean, for my kids at school, they want to make root beer. Actually, they tried to talk me into making beer. I nixed that, but it was a hard battle. They weren't serious, but they were trying me on it. I agreed, we'll make some root beer. And the great thing is even though sassafras, the key flavoring for root beer, is not something we can grow in Utah. I mean, I can add in a bunch of stuff like, say, fennel that grows just fine in Utah. And the seed has got a very nice licorice flavor, as does the plant somewhat. Agastache would be a similar but a little bit more vibrant flavor on that, depending on the species. And certainly the Agastache repressories, which is often known as root beer mint, would just do wonderful in an actual root beer. Heck, that thing's native to the south end of the state, if I remember right. Maybe northern Arizona is its limit. But either way, I mean, it's close by. It grows wonderfully here. I had enough of it, and if it weren't for the fact it's going to be in spring when I probably won't have the leaves for it, I would take in some of my Agastache to flavor this root beer and get a really individualized local root beer flavor. It would be excellent.
You put a big grin on my face just talking about this. This is cool. You know, the root beers have always traditionally been used as a spring tonic. Your mouth starts craving those things sometimes.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting with root beer because the name beer was added as marketing because the guy who really developed it, he was looking to make a tonic. He wanted to call it root tea, but he was trying to sell it to a bunch of hardcore miners. And they've got to have their beer. They call it root beer. At that point, really had not that much to do with beer and a lot more to do with an herbal infusion or an herbal tea. And so I think that's perhaps why some of us that grew up in this country crave it at times. I know I do. We can't grow sassafras, but we can grow some stuff that would be knockout in it. And I've been thinking about that actually for a couple of years now. So after I get this root beer experience with my students under my belt, I'm going to see if I can get enough this year of my Agastache to flavor some root beer and see how it turns out. I may even flavor it just entirely with that, slip it to a couple of my friends and see how they feel about it.
Put me on your playlist. That'll be fun. That's a cool idea. I know I've looked into that a couple of years ago myself, growing our own root beer garden, and I think that's a fun idea. I think that's cool, that especially when you're growing things that you have a specific purpose for, and you have them all kind of in one relatively close location.
One thing I find disappointing these days, when we were growing up, we all had like the back half or the back quarter of the back part of our lot in a garden. I know you lived on a bigger property than I did, but it was fairly common. We had big garden spaces back then. You had your sweet corn, you had your peas, your beans, your potatoes. There wasn't a lot of variation, but these days, they shrunk down the garden area. They put them in boxes because that's the way to garden, right? Is you got to put it in a box.
You're seeing that more and more.
Oh, yeah. It drove me crazy when I moved back from Georgia because I still had this picture in my mind of these garden spaces I grew up with. When I came back, I'm like, when the heck did the boxes take over? And I keep on hoping it's a fad, but people keep on planting these garden boxes. Now, I've got a garden box. It's on a piece of my driveway because I got more driveway than I know how to use. Okay, that's fine, right? I don't have a problem with that. But to put it on perfectly good ground, spend money to fill it with something, and then spend water to water it when it's got very little insulation to keep it from getting really hot and evaporating all that water, it's like, can't you just plant in the ground? I mean, yeah, if you can't actually plant your ground or got physical needs where you're not accessible, so you raise it up so you can work it. Okay, I got that. Great idea, but these fit people with healthy kids and they're going to the gym, and they got these little 4x4 garden boxes and they got three of them, and you know, they're going to feed themselves or do something. I don't know what. Boy, do I sound like I'm ranting or raving or what? Get in the real soil. We have great soil in Utah. Now, I know most people are going to complain. Oh, I got sandy soil. Oh, I've got clay soil. You know what? They're good. Most soils in Utah, unless you're really close to the lakes, is really, really good soil. Now, get out there, grow in it, enjoy it. Get your plants to feed off the soil, and they'll bring nutrition. They're going to bring minerals into your diet. It's great stuff. You don't need to go buy stuff at the bag at the store. Go get a scoop of the specialty soil mix because, you know, you've got horrible soil. Now your soil's fine. Put some mulch on it. It's maybe not perfect yet, but in 2 to 3 years, if you mulch it every year, you're going to end up with wonderful soil. Give it a try, folks. Just give it a try.
Yep, exactly. I think as they've come back to gardening, they've lost a generation, they've lost some information, and they think the only way that you can do things, it's like magic almost. You have to have a certain recipe, you have to have a certain thing, or it won't work.
Yeah, there's a guy around the valley who touts his system, and he charges over $200 an hour, and he'll show you how to do everything perfectly. And a couple years after that, I tend to get called in, and then we have a real serious discussion. And it's kind of sad because this guy thinks he's doing great stuff, but he's kind of lost touch, and he's gotten kind of well-known and popular, and he loses track of reality on it. And reality is what we got is actually pretty darn good here in Utah, and we should take advantage of it and grow in our soil. And you know, I remember the soil out in Lehigh when I grew up, and I didn't think about it then. That was some good soil out there. I mean, it wasn't Mississippi black mud per se, but my gosh, I talked to my dad about it. I said, hey, Dad, I'm trying to learn from my older generation. I said, Dad, how did you fertilize stuff out in Lehigh when I was a kid? And he just kind of smiled and said, I never fertilized it. Now, I don't necessarily recommend that because you will wear out your soil after too long, but I never fertilized it. We didn't need to. And again, I don't recommend that because you will wear out your soil. Be careful, don't overdo it, but that's how good our soil is. And we miss it here in Utah. We don't appreciate what we have.
And you also have to keep in mind also that not all soils are the same. Those of you listening out there may have maybe all rock maybe, but the raised bed is the only way you can really grow well. Every condition is different.
Now, I understand if you've got bad soil, but just because you have clay or sand doesn't mean it's bad soil. That just means that you have to learn how to understand that soil, and it might take a little care. But I've never had a soil that's so bad that I can't just go out and plant a garden the first year. And now, with subsequent years, if I do it right, if I take care of it right, I can make it a lot better. But by all means, learn slowly, learn how to take care of it, learn what makes a good growing soil. And almost any soil you have in Utah can be improved with a good amount of organic matter, preferably the top mulch. You don't need to till it in. In fact, long term, you'll do better by not tilling it in. And then each year, add some more mulch. In 5 years, you're going to have a jumping garden. And all you did was go out, plant, do a little weeding, and mulch it every once in a while. And you can really get some phenomenal results that way. One of my plans this week is just getting out and starting my mulching for the garden area that I'm really redoing the garden areas here. Most of the areas I had gardens I'm putting trees into because I just don't like the accessibility on them. And then I'm taking out a chunk of my lawn, and a good part of that, I'm going to mulch and I'm going to improve that soil. In 5 years, I'm going to have this great soil. All my neighbors are going to come around and say, how did you luck out with the good soil? Luck out, I built it. And you can do that.
Just takes
you
time.
You can do that.
Just takes time and a little planning and a little work.
Yeah. Like I said, get out to the nursery. Start looking. I'm going to be ordering plants in. And all the other nurseries are going to be doing the same thing. It's our time of the year. It's time to kick it in gear, get things stored up. We're going to have stuff in bloom. At my nursery, we've still got apple and fruit trees. Get them in before it gets hot. Come on. I got a bunch of apples, I got some pears, and get them in. The roots will just love you for getting it in when they're still cool. Same for our ornamental trees, both evergreens, deciduous, get them in now. You can make them live during the summer, but if you get them in now and get a little bit of root growth before they sprout out, you're going to have a lot less problem transplanting those trees. They're going to be less mad at you. You'll have less problems to fight and to deal with, and you don't have to throw so much water on them. And there's no time like planting a tree. Maybe 20 years ago, that's always a nice time to plant a tree. But other than that, the best time is now. To paraphrase somewhat possibly overused but extremely true statement.
If folks want to follow you, if they want to learn more about what you're up to, how do they get hold of you?
If you go onto Facebook, I'm the admin for Utah Gardeners. And this is probably the top four gardening groups on Facebook for Utah. And we really focus on good science and good practices that have been proven to be productive. Some of them sound really progressive and edgy and everything, but the science is behind it, the experience is behind it. It's just people haven't caught up to it. The other thing I'm doing right now is I'm on Patreon under Alex Grover, creating garden know-how. Now, I'm not really that good at bringing up Patreon, but it was fairly easy when I tried Googling it on my cell phone. So just put in Patreon and Alex Grover, and I think you'll probably get it pulled up fairly easily. And this is got some stuff that's open to just the general public. Some is open by a subscription only. That's about $1 a month. This is Utah. How much do you spend on your Mountain Dew in a week? $1's pretty cheap for a month of gardening advice and know-how and the ability to pick my brain on a personal level about your situation. So that's a nice little thing. And that dollar a month means that I can actually focus and give you the attention you need rather than me getting on Facebook and trying to filter through all the questions that are thrown out to everybody. You know, it's a hard way to do stuff. So that's one of the reasons I put the Patreon page together, is so I can get a focused talk to a client who's perhaps not really able to spend the money for me to come out, but I can still give them something. And again, there's some material that's there open. And right now I've been doing a plant profiles of the apple trees that will do well in Utah. And that's kind of a fun little project. I think it's one that we need. Utah State does some great work, but there's some holes in that. So I'm kind of filling in some of those holes and creating something that's a little bit more complete. Talking about apple flavors, apple varieties, what some of the weaknesses and strengths are, and a little bit more to help you grow them right and to let you know what's going on. So that's been a really fun project.
Looking forward to visiting with you soon again, Alex.
I look forward to it all the time. I kind of wish I could have caught you for a little longer at the Green Conference, but I know I was on the clock and I was working my tail off, and I think you were too. So it's good to be able to talk to you now.
It was fun. We raced through quickly and had another appointment shortly thereafter, so it worked out pretty well.
That's pretty much you, hardest working man in radio.
Great stuff. Mr. Alex Grover with Utah Gardeners, thank you again for taking a few minutes with us.
You're welcome. Thank you. And manana.
For the latest snowmobile grooming reports and current snowmobile conditions throughout the state, check out www.snowut.com. Grooming schedules are posted and conditions and snow depths are updated weekly. There's also a link to the Utah Avalanche Forecast Center so you can get all of your snowmobile information in one spot. This message is brought to you by Utah State Parks OHV Education.
Plenty of trail riding opportunities await throughout Utah. We're headed to the trailhead. Next on Western Life Radio.
If you would like a little more from your range experience than standing and shooting holes in paper, come and train with us. TaylorGunsmithing.com.
There's nothing quite like the great outdoors, and at Sportsman's Warehouse, we share your passion for hunting, fishing, and camping. If you want to feel at one with nature, this is the place to gear up. So whether you're ice fishing, predator hunting, snowshoeing, or winter camping, Sportsman's Warehouse has a terrific selection of all the latest equipment for your outdoor adventure. So when it's cold outside, that's the time to come and see what's hot inside. At Sportsman's Warehouse, take it outside. Plan your upcoming OHV adventures with resources available at your fingertips. Chris Haller with Utah State Parks and Recreation points us to options.
Well, we'd like for them to visit our website, which is ohv.utah.gov, and then there's several different headers in through there that just goes back to exactly what you mentioned, Brian. Either registration and permits, to education, to maps, to other additional resources. And so now we encourage folks to visit that website. It's evolving. It's a change in process. We put some information historically on there, maybe repackaged or look a little bit different. And so if people do have questions, they can reach us either through our email contact or our phone number, and one of our excellent customer service people would be able to help them with their questions. So we're well over 140 off-highway vehicle routes. We just added 13 for the month of January onto our interactive map, and then several months ago we were already just shy of 100. We're at 99, and so I know since the last time I took the count, we're close to that 135-140 area, with us still adding roughly about 10 to 15 on a month that are ATV ride routes. We really like to encourage people is, hey, as you're out and you're celebrating, and you leave the celebration with alcohol or other substances behind, do not participate in that type of activity.
Thanks for joining us. May all your days be filled with new adventures. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff. Explore the universe from one of Utah's dark sky parks. With more than 14 state park destinations to choose from, your family can gaze at the Milky Way, watch the moonrise, or make a wish during a meteor shower. With the right telescope, you can find nearby planets, tour distant galaxies, or capture the heavens with your own deep space photography. Your adventure begins with a camping reservation and a clear view to the darkened skies. Launch your epic nighttime adventure at stateparks.utah.gov.
Don't let your next family outing end in tragedy. Don't drink and ride. Driving an OHV under the influence of alcohol is no different than driving your car under the influence of alcohol. Law enforcement officers will be out checking riders and operators of OHVs. You could end up seeing jail time, loss of driver's license, the same stiff penalties that apply to operating a car. This message is from the Utah Division of Parks and Recreation. Ride responsibly.
Be prepared at home this winter season. Keep an emergency supply kit easily available that includes a battery-powered radio with extra batteries, canned food, and a manual can opener. Keep readily available some flashlights and battery-powered lamps, fuel for generators, and extra wood for the fireplace. These winter safety tips are brought to you by FEMA, the Region 8 Youth Preparedness Council, this station, and Western Life Radio.
Let's go.
But Mom, when will I be old enough so I don't have to wear my helmet? When will I become invincible just like you?
Sweetie, I'm not invincible. I need my helmet too. Anyone can get hurt, no matter how old they are.
Be responsible and set an example when you ride. Accidents do happen. Please remember, nobody is invincible.
Choose your adventure. With 46 state parks and an impressive list of recreational opportunities,
yes, bass fishing at Sand Hall State Park.
Visitors might have a hard time choosing what to do each weekend.
Woo! Windsurfing at Deer Creek State Park.
Choose your adventure. Explore Utah and create memories at Utah State Parks. For campground reservations, ideas for your next adventure, or to purchase an annual pass, stop by stateparks.utah.gov.
Now back to Western Life Radio with your host, Brian Brinkerhoff.
Mr. Ty Hunter joins us once again on the shoreline with Utah State Parks and Recreation. Thanks for taking a few minutes with us.
Yes, thanks, Brian. I really appreciate it.
Now, this is the time of year the perfect time to get the personal watercraft classes going. It's the perfect time to get some of those other educational things out of the way so that you are coming in running. We were talking with Bruce earlier about early season training for them. But it's important for all of us to train and remind ourselves of some of the safety things we need to be aware of when we hit that water.
Yes. Nationally, we're trying to just push for folks to be looking in spring and to look at Spring Aboard as one of the campaigns nationally that they put out to take a boating education class and take it early and take it in the spring. For those of you that will fall and turn of age this year, take that personal watercraft class. If you're going to be on a personal watercraft and operating out on the waterway, take it now instead of trying to cram it in and take it the night before when you're trying to go out on the water and then have that stress that you may not pass, you may run out of time. Take it now, take your time with it, absorb it, and actually learn. Sit down with your parents, have them go through and work through that class with you. There'll be things that mom and dad will learn from this too. So that's just the biggest thing. And then if you just really want to know a little bit more about boating, take one of these courses, this boating course for the state of Utah. It is on our website. If you were to go to boating.utah.gov, hit the education tab, you can take one of these courses with a small fee that there is for the course, but you can take it and learn a little bit more about boating and make you aware of a few more things that you may not have picked up from mom and dad when you were a kid.
So important to know these things and be on top of things. And it's funny, you know, we've talked about this before, but, you know, a lot of today's driving rules come from the boating world.
Oh, yeah. See, it's amazing when you start looking at some of these things, you're going, oh, I understand that. Oh, I understand. You know, right away on the road, usually it's the person to your right has the right away. That's the same way out on the waterway, and all those derive from there. The lighting's a little different, but the lights correspond with buoys and other things. You just need to understand how they communicate. You're a lake pal and you're going up lake, you're going to keep the red buoys to your right. If you're going down lake, you're going to keep the green buoys to your right. And that's really what you're looking at and going down and exiting out of some of our marinas, and they have a red and green buoy. It's green go out and red right return. It's really easy to figure out and to go with. You see any buoys that have an orange band at the top? That's telling you that there's going to be some type of restriction or to stay away. Any of our buoys that are white with an orange band at the top, it's either going to be a wakeless area. It's going to be a danger area. There may be a hazard within a close proximity of that buoy. And then there may be to where you have to keep your boat out of that area. So slow down, take a look at it, understand what that is saying. And not all of those white buoys are saying that it's a wakeless zone. There's other inherent issues that they're trying to communicate that are under the water or where you need to stay out of.
Good advice. Very good advice. Take advantage of these educational opportunities. I know the Coast Guard Auxiliary has many options too. And we also mentioned preparing that boat. There are free safety examinations, safe boating checks offered by the Coast Guard Auxiliary to make sure you're up to speed when you get that boat on the water for the first time.
Yes, like I said, our partners in safety is the United States Coast Guard Auxiliary. Those are a bunch of avid boaters that have taken it to an extra step to where they volunteer many, many hours on our waterways across the state. Hats off to them for what they do. Literally, they're volunteers, the same as the search and rescue group. They are volunteers, and they volunteer their time to be able to let folks know and provide services out there for folks on Utah waterways. So big hats off to them. They offer free vessel examinations. That can be when you come into a waterway, or if you were to go onto their website, the United States Coast Guard Auxiliary, you can schedule an appointment, and if they have somebody available, they could actually come to your home and do that vessel examination at your home before you're underway to go to a body of water. So that's some of the cool things. Our rangers are out there. They are out. They'll try to provide these courtesy inspections to anybody and everybody they can. Sometimes, unfortunately, some of these examinations are given in a law enforcement stop, and it's just to make sure that everything is up and running and okay on that boat. But in most of the circumstances there, we try to do everything preventative instead of a reactionary type of a situation where we have to stop you because of some of the behaviors that you're showing out on the waterway. We would rather do a preventative check than a reactionary one.
On these safe checks, what is the most common mistakes? What are some of the most common things people are missing when they first hit the water in the first part of the year?
Some life-threatening things, folks are really getting pretty good at making sure they have enough jackets for everybody on board the boat. The problem we're seeing is they may not have the right size jacket for those that are on board the boat. So that's some of the things we're seeing is make sure you know where your jackets are and make sure that they are the properly sized jacket for everybody that is on board. Other things that come along is the main thing out there that's going to save you is going to be those life jackets. And that's what I try to make sure our folks focus on in these checks. Fire extinguishers are great. I think we've done a great job in educating folks and getting folks cognizant they need to have a fire extinguisher on board a boat. The bilge pump, some way to bail, and then spare propulsion on the smaller boats. It's 20 feet and under. You need to have spare propulsion. That can be a little kicker motor to a paddle to where you have that, to where you can move that boat along. And that's just things to be able to help you out there. The throwables, those little seat cushion bilges with the straps on them, those are great. They will save somebody's life. Hopefully it's not anybody from your boat, but it may be from somebody from your boat that falls overboard. Those are just things there. But really our most risky thing that we see out there that folks are doing that's going to either damage their boat or harm or even kill somebody, and that's just their behavior while they're out on the water. Speed and proximity is a big one. They're going too fast when they're in that close proximity of 150 feet of another boat or person in the water, and it ends up in a collision or a collision with a person that doesn't turn out really well.
Very good reminders there. There's a lot of things to keep in mind this time of year as we first get out of there on the water, and a little ounce of prevention saves a lot of headaches on the water if we don't do it right.
Boating's not simple. When you start really explaining everything to it and all the ifs and ands and buts and whens and everything else that go out there with it, it simply just don't fill the thing up, make sure you got life jackets in and take off. There's a little more to it. And so put that time into it, and it'll be a very safe and family fun and enjoyable outing time after time after time. You just need to put that investment in the beginning.
Nice. Now we're coming into the spring months. What's the time people need to be drying those boats?
What we do is direct any of our users, because we have our period of time, and as Brian had asked me, what is the dry time? And frankly, you know what? I rely upon that website to go back and look at it. So the website to go to is STD, Sierra Tango Delta of the Sea.com. So it's STD of the Sea.com. And go there to find out those dry times, to get your 360-day certification form, to get any further information about our aquatic invasive species, that's where I would go. If you're unable to find or remember that one, just remember that we do have a link on our website, boating.utah.gov, about aquatic invasive species, and we'll help you get there if by chance you don't find that website there. So boating.utah.gov, we can get you there and answer any of those questions.
That'll point you in the right direction. And that certificate, having that printed and having it done before you even hit the water is just smart.
Yep.
So stop by the website. If you're having some glitches or some problems or something, come back often and get that taken care of as soon as you can.
Correct. Yes. Well, don't throw your hands up in the air and walk away from it. Just be patient.
Any other tips or advice? Any other news on the boating front throughout the state of Utah?
The year's kind of started. I'm going to tell you that these managers have done an excellent job in controlling the water levels, especially on our upper lakes and reservoirs. So get out, use them, and use them early. And then as hopefully Mother Nature will deal us a cooler spring and keep giving us a little bit of moisture here and there, and we're going to have a good year. But just make sure that you're not complacent. We've had some really lucky years this last couple of years, reduce accidents and reduce fatalities, and we want to keep that up. But unfortunately, folks make bad decisions, and sometimes that costs their lives and others' lives. So just don't become complacent.
Of course, we always want to have full snowpack, so we always have plenty of water extra to get around with, because the demands have certainly grown as the state has grown in population.
Yes, and that's just it. As more and more people we come in here, the more demands get placed on things. And so just be cognizant of what you have there and make sure that this is a very, very, very important resource. And it's not important for recreation. That is a byproduct of having this resource around. Remember, we need water. That's one of the essential things that we need to live. So let's take care of it. That's why we want to make sure that boaters take that extra caution. We don't introduce in any little critters. And when I refer to that, these aquatic invasive species that could cause problems in trying to move water from one point to the next. Boaters need to just make sure that they take that extra step, extra caution, and not be the one that moves these aquatic invasive species around.
I agree with you 100%. I would hate to be that guy who was responsible for that. That would be just as bad as the guy who started that big old fire in southern Utah. I'd be just crushing. That would be not a good deal.
Yeah. And the thing is here is you may not know you were that person. That's the scary part of the whole deal there. So just make sure that you are extra diligent in how you do your clean, drain, and dry. If you have any questions, you can ask any of the technicians that are out there. Have them take a look-see. Now, we're not going to go out and wash your boat because it's extra dirty and whatever else. So I'm sorry, that's just misuse of our state time and funds. But if you have a question, you were at a suspect body of water or an infested body of water, and you're not really sure that it is completely clean, take that extra time, ask those questions, and make sure that you do your job. And our folks will really appreciate that, and they'll take care of you.
But you probably would wash my boat if I asked you, just because you're a nice guy, probably.
I'll, well, I don't know.
No commitment there.
Unfortunately, we've been seeing a lot more of those people that want a hot water wash, and they don't warrant to be washed. And folks get upset with it, and they got to realize we're not the quarter wash that's on every corner by the gas station. The reason why we do these is we do these to kill off those critters and kill off those plants that may be that have been attached to your boat one way or another, and we just don't want to move them to another body of water. We're not here to get the dirt and hard water spots off your boat. So that's something you can do in your driveway.
That's right. Again, the launch ramp for all the information you need for boating here in the state of Utah is where?
Boating.utah.gov.
Anything else you'd like to wrap up with?
Other than just be safe, be courteous while you're out there. Just remember, you're sharing these bodies of water with a lot of people, and I know it's your vacation, but just be courteous and be kind. I think that's a major thing we got to do, period, across everything we do in a day, is just be kind and courteous to those that are around us.
I want to thank you for taking time with us today. It's been an honor visiting with you. Have a great time. We'll see you soon on the water.
Okay. Thanks, Brian.
Play safe on the water. In Utah, youth 12 to 17 must pass an approved safety class prior to operating personal watercraft on Utah waters. Classes are offered statewide. Register now or get more information by calling 801-538-BOAT. Visit stateparks.utah.gov. This message brought to you by the Utah State Parks Boating Program.
Head out on the trail for some amazing snowmobiling. We're loading up the sleds next on Western Life Radio. There's nothing quite like the great outdoors, and at Sportsman's Warehouse, we share your passion for hunting, fishing, and camping. If you want to feel at one with nature, this is the place to gear up. So whether you're ice fishing, predator hunting, snowshoeing, or winter camping, Sportsman's Warehouse has a terrific selection of all the latest equipment for your outdoor adventure. So when it's cold outside, that's the time to come and see what's hot inside at Sportsman's Warehouse. Sportsman's Warehouse. Take it outside.
If you would like a little more from your range experience than standing and shooting holes in paper, come and train with us. TaylorGunsmithing.com.
take advantage of amazing late-season snowmobiling, Chris Haller with Utah State Parks and Recreation checks the latest grooming conditions.
We want to remind people when they are going out and they are going to go snowmobiling, obviously, first and foremost, check those avalanche advisories. Extremely important. And we've had some really, really good snowmobile conditions around the state for several months now. And like you had mentioned, the temperatures are changing. We're starting to see a little bit of maybe a shift over on the early spring season side of things. And that still is very complimentary because at the higher elevations, that snow is still holding intact. We're still grooming. Yes, some of our snowmobile trails, and given the warm of the day with some of the heavy, wet snow that we're receiving in different areas of the state, makes grooming the trails a little bit more difficult. And so we've gone from the fresh powder and Utah traditional snow that we're so inclined to see to the heavy, wet stuff. And so a lot of varying different types of snow at different levels and different amounts that have been allocated. So those avalanche advisories are very, very important to adhere to and to follow that. And of course, if you haven't checked the batteries in that beacon recently, hey, pull out those old batteries and put some fresh ones in. And as a reminder, we always encourage people to carry an extra set of spare batteries in case their buddy or riding partner, their batteries may go down. And we've worked in conjunction with the Golden Spike Snowmobile Association, and we have an updated solar-powered avalanche beacon station at the Monte Cristo Trailhead. That's a new unique thing for us because on some of our non-traditional areas, this is the first that's with a state park affiliation.
Thanks for joining us. May all your days be filled with new adventures. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff.
Ricky, my man. Hey, headed out on the lake, I see. These fish aren't going to catch themselves, am I right? Got some brewskis from a broski.
No, thank you. That's illegal.
What? Come on, aren't you the guy that wrestled the buffalo on Antelope Island?
First of all, they're called bison, and I was delivering a breech calf.
Wow, come on, man. I'll trade you this sixer of suds for that life jacket.
A real man always wears his life vest. And he never partakes of alcohol while operating a boat. Everyone knows that.
Yeah, not everybody does.
Everybody knows that.
You got me.
Connect with the world through Rise Broadband and stay in touch with all things important to you and your family. Known as the number one fixed wireless internet provider in the United States, Rise Broadband will keep you connected with work, school, shopping, and entertainment. Whether you live in a suburban or rural area, Rise helps keep you and your family connected with the people and things that you value most. Rise Broadband offers flexible packages designed to meet your budget so you can enjoy all your favorite music and movies with fast, reliable, in-home Wi-Fi. Stream your favorite shows, play the hottest games without buffering, and stay in touch with family and friends. Get more for less with Rise Broadband. To check availability in your area, visit risebroadband.com or call 844-411-RISE.
Gun-free school zones make for soft targets for those who would do school violence. Utah schools are not soft targets, thanks to the education provided by FasterUtah.org.
Message, live wild and free.
folks, you've been listening to Western Life Radio, a 30-year outdoor and Western lifestyle tradition. Thanks for joining us. May all your days be filled with new adventures. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff.